I think it's important for people to realize, especially with malvertising, the nature of the threat. In that, I think there's a bit of misconception. A lot of people think, well, I have to, to go to some adult site to get infected, or even, I have to click on an ad to get infected. And really, here, these are threats that are affecting everybody on popular sites, legitimate sites, and don't require any form of user interaction. So I think if people realize that, then they can really, arm themselves better.
Last month, the Malwarebytes security log had a report about a malware campaign that was using Google's DoubleClick ad network to serve sites that would attempt to load malware on visitors' computers. At this point, that isn't a current ongoing attack or an ongoing story, because that particular exploit seemed to have been shut down pretty quickly, within maybe a day or two. But problems like that pop up all the time. They occur without any kind of warning. So let's start by defining what's meant by the term malvertising.
Malvertising is short for malicious advertising. So it consists of typically a flash-based ad that is displayed on popular websites. These sites are known as publishers. They get revenue from the ad networks. And what happens is bad actors submit an ad that is malicious, then bid for placement on, popular websites. And once the ad is loaded onto the website, people that visit the page will be redirected silently to, malicious traffic and then an exploit. It's important to note that you don't actually need to click on the ad. Most of the flash-based ads are very, very rich. You can embed all sorts of scripting languages in there, in particular JavaScript. So the simple fact of loading a page and viewing it is enough for a script to trigger and in turn send your browser to visit malicious URLs.
It looks like from some of the diagrams that were shown on your blog that some of these things travel through multiple locations, if you will. What's the technology used here to serve the malware?
There's usually several layers. A website will deal with one or multiple ad networks, and the bigger ones typically are more trusted. So you'll see networks such as DoubleClick being probably one of the most popular ones because of not only because it's backed by Google, but also by the amount of data they have on users, and that's something really important within the ad space. In that you want to target your ads to your audience, whether they're from a specific country, their gender, the platform that they're using, if it's on mobile or a typical computer. These are all things that are very interesting for advertisers. So if they go with popular ad agencies, they provide better, more granular data to better target your audience. These ad networks such as DoubleClick, they'll in turn provide access to the page to other buyers, potential buyers, which could be advertisers directly, or more usually other perhaps smaller than DoubleClick advertising agencies. So these companies will buy from Google, and in turn, then they can resell to other to another third party, which could be an advertiser. The problem is that, at least from the Google point of view, the chain can be complex and long. And while you may be trusting your third party provider, you don't really know or you don't have much control as to how they're going to use that space, who they're going to sell it to. And that's one of the problems with advertising. There was a time when people used to buy ad in bulk. So you'd buy, you'd say, I want to, 10,000 impressions per day on this site, and this is, how much I pay, and that was it. You would know ahead of time. Now things are much more dynamic. The ads that you see when you browse, they're displayed based on a constant bidding between ad agencies. So you don't really know ahead of time which ad is going to be displayed. It's down to which advertiser is going to spend the most money on that spot at that particular time. So that makes it less predictable. You don't really know who's going to occupy that space. You don't really know if it's going to be one of your third parties or somebody down the chain. And all of that creates a lot of complexity, which creates a direct space for bad guys to exploit.
It would seem that because this is so complex and could have so many layers, that DoubleClick and Google really couldn't reasonably be held accountable for anything malicious like this. In other words, they wouldn't be legally liable in any way.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not their own networks that are compromised. You know, they're not the ones serving the malicious ads. But at the same time, it impacts them. I mean, it's their business. It's their own reputation, and it's, you know, the ad business in general that is suffering from it. There's, you know, like you said in the beginning, malvertising is very common. It happens all the time. It happens less on, you know, popular ad networks because there is a bit more vetting process, you know, in terms of who you deal with and the partnerships that you have. For example, if you want to buy ad space from Google, you have to be accredited by Google to be trusted in order to do that. And in the story that we published about the DoubleClick, you know, infection, the advertiser, which was Zito, was a trusted ad provider for Google. So Google already entrusted them with that, you know, relationship. And so it becomes a little more difficult. Google did react pretty quickly. I think in the immediate, you know, the few hours that followed the detection, they cut the relationship off until the provider could figure out what the problem was. But, you know, from overall, I mean, it is impacting them. They can't, you know, they have to take that seriously. Now, in terms of, you know, the billions of ads that are printed on sites every day, how much malware is there? It's a very low percentage. We don't really have exact figures. But when it affects big sites like YouTube.com or Yahoo.com, you know, these are important sites, so the spread of malware is going to be much more important on those types of sites. So I think that overall, it's you know, the overall ad industry has to look at, you know, what can be done to make this this problem not go away, because I don't think you can completely eradicate it, but at least reduce the risk by being you know, perhaps have more transparency in who we deal with, or in, you know, the numbers of third-party advertisers that we sell to. I think if we limited that to a certain number, it'd be easier to keep track on. You know, for example, if DoubleClick says, I'm dealing with this company, but I want ads from you that you print directly. I don't want you to resell to somebody else. That makes it a little bit more controlled.
You mentioned that these things usually get taken down pretty quickly once they're noticed. But, of course, they pop up pretty quickly, too, and without any kind of warning at all. So it seems that the responsibility is still on the person who owns a computer and who is using a browser to look at something on the Internet to have some sort of defense mechanism in place. What kinds of defenses can help?
It's pretty much a whack-a-mole kind of game. So, you know, in the end, you want to protect yourself, regardless of the efforts that the, you know, ad networks are going to put in place. You want to make sure that when you're browsing any site, because we're not talking about dodgy sites, we're talking about any site, you know, especially, you know, mainstream sites that get affected as well. You know, you want to make sure that your computer is up to date, that all the plugins in your browser are up to date. If you don't use certain plugins, for example, such Java, you can disable it in the browser. So there are certain add-ons that are not necessary, but are they're a threat vector, so it's better to disable them. There are certain top solutions, such as pop-up blockers or ad block, that will block ads completely from being displayed as you browse the site. These are effective, but there are drawbacks from them. Your user experience browsing the net is going to be diminished. You're going to have, you know, a lot of time, you know, click allow, you know, to allow every single time a site is sending, you know, whether it's a Flash-based content or even JavaScript. And also it goes against the whole advertising model, in a sense that a lot of the websites that give you content, they rely on the revenues from advertising to give you that content. So it kind of, you know, kills that. So I think overall, it's probably better, at least that's what I would recommend, that people make sure that the computers are up to date, they have proper antivirus and anti-malware security. And as far as these type of threats, which are all web-based, and don't require user interaction. Software like anti-exploit software that detects malicious behaviors is really helpful as well.
I think most people know already that it's a really bad idea to install more than one antivirus program. Back in the old days, people used to think, well, if one is good, two will be better. But of course, that was never the case. Malwarebytes is a different kind of application. And as I understand it, it coexists with an antivirus application.
It's not like it's not a simple math equation of I'm going to add 10 AVs to my computer and it's, you know, I'm going to be 10 times more protected. It doesn't work that way. And in fact, you know, there are disadvantages. Sometimes even running one AV can really slow down your machine. So imagine putting a couple and then your computer becomes almost unusable. So Malwarebytes, I mean, we place ourselves in the anti-malware category. We don't go after, you know, traditional viruses. So we're more after threats that are, you know, that are relevant to the users, like current threats. We maintain a fresh database of, you know, of threats. And also being one thing that we strive for is being able to detect what we call the zero-hour malware, so things that are very, very new and drop to the user. And that's really, I think, for all security products, that's one of the main difficulties. There's no question that a particular threat can be detected by any antivirus or any security product in general. But the question is, how fast did we detect it? For example, you'll see a lot of the free products like Microsoft Security Essentials, which is, you know, it's quite good. But they will detect the threat perhaps 6, 12 hours later, which by then the threat has already moved on to something else. So what we strive for is detecting that threat as soon as possible. So we do it in a few different ways. We have generic signatures that will work on families of malware that we see. So instead of having a single fingerprint, we catalog a threat based on certain aspects that it shows. So if you know, there's a mutation or a variant of that threat in the future, we're able to detect it as well based on those characteristics. And as well, you know, as from our own research labs where we have, you know, various honeypots and other systems that collect threats in real time, we also analyze, you know, in top priority, anything that is a result of an infection from things like malvertising or other type of drive-by downloads. These are rushed to the researchers because they have more value in our eyes than, you know, other types of threat that you may download as a user and down, you know, click, double click or things like that. We see threats that come to you unwillingly, as you were just browsing the web, for example, as much more vicious and dangerous to the users. So anything that's web threat related, that's something that we work really hard on as well.